chapter 11, beginning at verse 1. I wish you would bear with me in a little foolishness. Do bear with me. I feel a divine jealousy for you, for I promised you in marriage to one husband, to present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. For I promised you in marriage to one husband, to present you as a chaste virgin to Christ, to present you as a pure virgin to Christ. Interesting language. What does he mean? Now, he's writing to the Corinthian church. This is chapter 11, so we may well be in the letter of tears, and we're dealing with a situation that certainly is not as good as chapters 1 through 9. So we're dealing with a difficult situation. And he says, I wish you would bear with me in a little foolishness. Do bear with me. I feel a divine jealousy for you. For I promised you in marriage to one husband to present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. What's he mean by that phrase? That I promised you in marriage to one husband to present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. The true gospel. And as a chaste virgin promised in you in marriage to one husband. Not to several husbands, spiritual relationship, but to one husband.
One God, the true God.
One God, the true God, and marriage.
Monogamy,
marriage. What does he mean by marriage here?
Committed
relationship. In the Old Testament, it was, when we studied Jeremiah, this came out. God viewed his people as his wife. And in fact, two wives, Judah and Israel. And they were married to Yahweh. And when they went and worshipped the gods of the Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Egyptians, that was described by the prophets as being spiritual adultery, spiritual whoredoms. Mm-hmm. And God viewed spiritual infidelity, the worship of other deities, as being the equivalent of going astray in a marriage. He has prepared the church in Corinth, the Christians in Corinth, for marriage to one husband, a chaste virgin offered unto Christ, not to another god, not to other gods, but only to Christ.
And the implication is also that he's not even doing it for, secondarily, he's not doing it for himself. He doesn't add himself in there and say, you know what, I did this all for, I'm doing this for...
It's not a menage a trois.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't going to go there.
But I would.
And have these people been witnessed to before by other prophets, or is this the first time that they have heard the word of God?
He is their spiritual father in Christ. They have never heard the gospel by anybody else as a church. Now, there are pieces within it that may have heard the gospel from others, may have heard about Jesus from others. But Paul is their spiritual founding pastor, their spiritual father as a church. Okay.
But they've also been listening to these false...
They've listened to people who followed after Paul, who came where he had planted, and then the gospel, who came after him and who preached sometimes another gospel, which isn't another gospel, who told them, well, you really can't trust Paul. He's not entirely trustworthy because he used to persecute the church. And he didn't tell you all you had to do, man.
And he eats ham sandwiches.
And he eats ham sandwiches. And men, you got to cut on yourself and get rid of that foreskin and all that. And women, you've got to start cooking kosher and all that. No, he didn't tell them any of that. And therefore, they said, well, you can't necessarily trust Paul entirely. So, yes, he was their spiritual father, their spiritual founder. But I am afraid, verse 3, but I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by its cunning. You know, so Adam gets out on this one. But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by its cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. Just as Satan led Eve astray, so also Satan's going to lead you astray. I'm afraid that's what's happening. Remember, this is written, no matter what, we know from chapter 10, it's written from a situation that isn't good. Things have gone sour. Be this the letter of tears, or things have gone sour since chapter 9. Things are bad, and he's afraid that they've been led astray. For if someone comes and proclaims another Jesus than the one we proclaimed, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or a different gospel from the one you accepted, you submit to it readily enough. Boom, 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 boom.
You gullible Corinthians.
You gullible Corinthians, you idiots. I came and I preached the gospel of Jesus Christ to you. I left. Someone comes after me and preaches a message that isn't the gospel. That's another gospel. They preach a Jesus that isn't Jesus. It's another Jesus, which is an interesting phrase there in verse 4. Someone comes and proclaims another Jesus. Verse 4 in the NAS reads, for if one comes and preaches another Jesus whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel that you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully. Man, you accept it easily. You'll accept any old message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I left and those, well, to use a modern reference, a good old gospel preacher preaches the gospel and converts a town, leaves, and the Mormons come. With a different Jesus.
With another gospel of Jesus Christ.
With another gospel of Jesus Christ.
And you take it hook, line, and sinker.
You swallow it whole. No trouble at all. You bear this beautifully. You submit to it readily enough. You don't seem to have any trouble with it. And that's essentially, you know, reading between the lines. Remember, this is a helpful thing to do when you read Paul's letters. Yeah, whatever has happened, it's in part because some people have come and have preached this other message. So it's pretty bad. And it reflects, therefore, some of what Paul said actually in 1 through 9, if you think about it, about what had gone astray and had now been recovered. Someone has come along and preached another gospel. It's the same problem he had in Galatia over on Asia Minor, where people had come preaching this other gospel, which Paul says isn't another gospel, but they trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. That's what they're doing in Corinth. So it's not just disagreement over what Paul said in 1 Corinthians. It's not just disagreement over his visits, although that's all part of it. It's that they have had people come preaching to them another message, and the gullible fools have just sucked it right in. He prepared them, pure virgins to be married to Christ, and they just got dinged. They just got spiritually raped.
They corrupted themselves.
Yeah. I think, verse 5, I think that I am not in the least inferior to these super apostles. Now, read between the lines. You know, Paul comes in, he preaches the gospel. They readily admit, yes, he's an apostle. We send him, though, which makes us better apostles. We're super apostles. Ta-da-da-da! Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. You know, they had blue suits with a big S.A. on it or something. I mean, that's the kind of image you almost get. The super apostles. The NAS kind of runs it. The eminent apostles. The Revised English Bible says super apostles. The King James
says eminent.
The English version, or today's English version, says very special so-called apostles of yours.
Ooh, dripping with a little sarcasm there.
Yeah, just dripping with sarcasm, Paul. The super apostles, the eminent apostles. These folk who came along preaching the gospels and claiming themselves to being, oh, so much better than Paul. I think that I'm not in the least inferior to these super apostles.
Now, were these the...
Brethren.
From the brethren from James?
Brethren of James. After all, think about it. Paul wasn't with Jesus, didn't travel with Jesus, didn't see Jesus in Jesus' life prior to the crucifixion. Neither had James the brother of the Lord, although he knew Jesus. He wasn't a follower of Jesus, but Peter certainly was. And the other apostles certainly were. Super apostles, as in those who were intimate relations to Jesus. Brother of the Lord kind of idea. Peter, keeper of the keys kind of idea. You know, that you're talking about something in here that they were claiming position. These fellows who followed Paul, just as in Galatia, were claiming position over Paul. Claiming, we taught Paul, we sent Paul, we're superior to Paul, anything you hear, we taught him, and he didn't teach you everything. So you should listen to us and not him.
For I reckon that in nothing I am behind those who are in surpassing degree apostles.
In surpassing degree apostles. This is a very sarcastic statement on his part.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't think they're super apostles. He doesn't think they're eminent apostles. They may be apostles, but they aren't any superior to him. I think that I am not in the least inferior to these super apostles. I may be untrained in speech. Now, this is rhetorical here, all right? I may be untrained in speech, but not in knowledge. Certainly in every way and in all things, we have made this evident to you.
Well, this likens back to when they were with Jesus fighting over who was the greatest.
Mm-hmm. James,
and who was going to get to sit on the right-hand side.
James and John were just all upset as to, you know, who's going to get to sit at the right hand of the Lord? Who's going to be, you know, his super apostles? And the same kind of thing now exists later on between the other super apostles, so-called, and Paul. And Paul says, you know, I may not be the most eloquent preacher, but I've got knowledge and you know it.
I know what I'm talking about.
I may be untrained in speech, and no, that's not true.
He's untrained in public speaking.
At public speaking. But if I am unskilled in speech, that's a rhetorical statement. It may not be his 100% top feature, speaking in public, but he's still good at it.
Yeah,
and he had training at the feet of Gamaliel in terms of theology, and his writing, you've got to remember, is dictated writing. That's a different kind of writing. And in his day, dictated writing is more like just sitting there and giving a speech. And sometimes it's a heck of a lot harder to give a speech to a guy sitting there with a piece of paper and a quill than it is to stand in front of people and give a speech and react and respond to their responses. So this statement, I may not be skilled in speech, is a rhetorical statement. He is, but that takes, you know, second place to his position, his understanding, his efficiency in knowledge. Certainly in every way and in all things, we have made this evident to you. Questions?
I thought it referred to him being able to speak, not being able to speak. What's the language that he said he had trouble, that he had to have?
Greek.
Is it Greek?
No, he was fluent in Greek. The language that he probably did not have, huh? Yeah, the language he probably did not have great facility in would have been Latin, the language of the Western Empire, the language of Spain. The educated language was always Greek everywhere, but the language of the people in the West would have been Latin. And while Paul would have been fluent in Hebrew and Aramaic and Greek, and he grew up a Greek speaker, he may not have had anything more than a rudimentary knowledge of, possibly reading knowledge of Latin, which would not have been uncommon. Educated people at that time spoke regional languages in Greek and the regional languages of where they lived, and he wouldn't have had a reason to have learned the language of Rome so much, especially since speaking Greek would have been perfectly fine for getting around in Italy at that time. So I don't think it speaks to that. I think it's more to his ability as an orator in general that he's talking about here. And one of the things that was said about him was, well, he's not very impressive in person, is he? Remember, his letters are weighty, but in person, he's kind of weak and mealy-mouthed and milquetoast. You know, in letter, he's quite forceful, but in person, you know,
He's mild.
Well, you know, that statement was made about him, and here he's kind of playing with that statement. I may not be the greatest orator, but I have knowledge, and you know it. You know that. Verses 7 through 11, Susan.
Was it a sin for me to lower myself in order to elevate you by preaching the gospel of God to you free of charge? I robbed other churches by receiving support from them so as to serve you. And when I was with you and needed something, I was not a burden to anyone, for the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied what I needed. I have kept myself from being a burden to you in any way and will continue to do so. As surely as the truth of Christ is in me, nobody in the regions of Achaia will stop this boasting of mine. Why? Because I do not love you? God knows I do.
Or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge? I raised money for my ministry there in Corinth by sitting and doing tent work, working in my hand trade rather than live off of you. I robbed other churches even by taking wages from them to serve you. And when I was present with you and was in need, I was not a burden to anyone, for when the brethren came from Macedonia, they fully supplied my need. And in everything I kept myself from being a burden to you and will continue to do so. As the truth of Christ is in me, this boasting of mine will not be stopped in the regions of Achaia. Why? Because I do not love you? God knows that I do. Why do you think he says... Or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that I might be exalted? You might be exalted, because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge. What is he meaning here? Read between lines. What's he saying? What was being said about me?
That he was a fraud.
That he was a fraud? Why?
Because he wasn't charging for what he did.
Good apostles charge. You got to pay
them.
They
get paid.
They get paid. Or did I commit a sin in humbling myself? Oh, look at Paul. Oh, man, he doesn't even accept money from you. Sits on the street corner, puts out a shingle, and works for a living. What kind of apostle is he? Are you going to listen to a man that sits there and makes tents all day? Or are you going to listen to us super apostles whom you pay?
A part-time apostle.
Are you going to listen to the part-time apostle or to us super ones? Nuh-uh. I robbed other churches, he says. I robbed other churches by taking wages from them to serve you. Why didn't he accept money from the church in Corinth to support him in his ministry there? He accepted money from Macedonian churches. He accepted money elsewhere from them in his ministry to support him in his ministry. Other churches were quite generous with him. Why did he not accept money from the Corinthian churches?
Well, at that time, it wasn't that man having a relationship with his father's wife while that money was being collected. And if that's the case, that would be seen as hush money. Look, we're paying our dues. Don't tell us what we can or can't do if we're paying our dues.
This is more of during the time that he's talking about the time that he was in ministry there. Before all of that popped up, while he was actually there living in Corinth preaching, not writing to them across the Aegean from Ephesus. So this is prior to that event. While he was there converting them, teaching them about Jesus, he didn't accept money from them.
Because he was trying to model agape. He was trying to give.
Thank you.
Everything.
He was being, in his own actions, an example of the selfless, unasking love of Christ. And in contrast with the character of all the other pagan religions in that city, where the priests demanded great financial support from the people in their religions. So he was sort of in contrast to the pagan religions of that city. And that's important because Corinth was highly cosmopolitan and had many pagan temples where the priests there demanded support from their people. So that could well be true. Also, his church is made up of mostly pagans. Some Jews, but mostly pagans. And so he was also trying to generate a contrast that way. Also, it is true that Paul's general pattern was not to accept significant support from people that he was first preaching to, but support from people whom he had already converted. So while he was in Corinth, it made sense for people that were members of churches that he had already converted, made sense that they would support him. Now that he's in Ephesus, it would make sense that the people in Corinth would help support him there. They're not. And that may have been part of the problem. And also may have been one of the things that was used against him by the super apostles. He didn't accept money from you while he was here. Why should you support him now? Other thoughts? Carol, verses 12 through 15.
But what I do, I will also continue to do, that I may cut off the opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the things of which they boast. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their work.
Last time the question was, will we get to see, or what kind of weapons Paul is talking about, and I called them spiritual nukes. Mm-hmm. This is one of them right here. The ability of identifying the super apostles as being false apostles, as being apostles of Satan. And that's exactly what he does here. Mm-hmm. For such boasters are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ, and no wonder even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is not strange if his ministers also disguise themselves as ministers of righteousness. He just called those who opposed him there as ministers of Satan. In 3 verses, he just lowered the boom. Whammo.
And also said, you know, their end will correspond to their deeds, which said, you know, even beyond what I'm saying right here, they're going to have to answer.
Their deceitfulness, their disguising themselves as apostles of Christ is going to be their undoing. Mm-hmm. They are ministers of Satan, not of Christ. I mean, there are very few strategic nuclear weapons as powerful as identifying your opponents as being ministers of Satan. you can't go to the nubbin of the problem more directly than to say, those whom you've been listening to who oppose me, they are ministers of Satan. And you've been listening to them. Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Big oops.
Now, think about it for just a moment. If this is the letter of tears, you can see why.
Mm-hmm.
he is extremely hard here. Extremely hard. And for a good reason. Okay, Craig, verses 16 through 21, and I'll tell you when to stop in 21, so just start, 16 through 21.
I repeat, let no one think that I am a fool, but if you do, then accept me as a fool, so that I too may boast a little. What I am saying in regard to this boastful confidence, I am saying not with the Lord's authority, but as a fool. Since many boast according to human standards, I will also boast, for you gladly put up with fools, being wise yourself.
Stop. Just that's fantastic.
That is sarcastic.
That's fantastic and sarcastic, and he's still launching nuclear weapons at them. I repeat, let no one think that I'm a fool. But if you do, then accept me as a fool, so that I may boast a little. I just want to have at it. I just want to be boasting here. I mean, they boast. The super apostles are boasting right and left. They're bragging about their credentials. They're bragging about who they are. What I am saying in regard to this boastful confidence, I am not saying with the Lord's authority, but as a fool. So don't assume that I'm speaking for Jesus here. Since many boast according to human standards, I will also boast. They're boasting about their background, their education, their authority, who has written them letters of authority and commended them to them. For you gladly put up with fools, being wise yourself. You think you're wise. I mean, the Corinthian church.
You're so smart.
The Corinthian church was filled with people who believed themselves to be spiritually superior. They were involved in speaking in tongues. They thought that all of that, the spiritual gifts were important, and that you should have the flashy ones, not the humble ones. And they loved to argue about who was a member of the better house church, who had a better founding pastor. I belong to Cephas. I belong to Peter. I belong to Christ. I was baptized by Peter himself, some of them said. And some said they were baptized by Paul, trying to brag about their own credentials within Paul himself. And he said, uh-uh, don't you go there. I won't let you go there. That's what he said in the first letter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to let them brag about the human credentials like the super apostles do, but he's going to do it here now to play the fool just like them. I mean, you gladly put up with fools, so I'm going to be a fool. Maybe you'll put up with me if I'm a fool too. For you gladly put up with fools being wise yourselves. Sarcasm dripping. Okay, pick up at verse 20.
For you put up with it when someone makes slaves of you, or preys upon you, or takes advantage of you, or puts on airs, or gives you a slap in the face. To my shame, I must say, we were too weak for that.
Stop. Now, right there, he says, you know, these fools, you put up with them when they make slaves of you or prey upon you or take advantage of you or puts on airs or gives you a slap in the face. You put up with them. They brag about their background, their credentials. They brag about who they are. They call themselves the super apostles and denigrate me. And they treat you like dirt. And you put up with them.
An abusive relationship.
Yeah. You like being beaten on, don't you? To my shame, I must say, we were too weak for that. We couldn't do that. We're not nearly what those super apostles are in this department.
Don't have the stomach for it.
Okay, pick it up again and finish out verse 21 and keep going until I stop you.
But whatever anyone dares to boast of, I am speaking as a fool. I also dare to boast of that. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I'm talking like a madman. I'm a better one. With far greater labors, far more imprisonments, with countless floggings, and often near death. 5 times I have received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I received a stoning. 3 times I was shipwrecked for a night and a day, and I was adrift at sea. On frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, dangers from bandits, dangers from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, and danger from false brothers and sisters. In toil and hardships, through many a sleepless night, hungry and thirsty, often without food, cold and naked. And besides other things, I am under daily pressure because of my anxiety for all the churches. Who is weak? I am not weak. Who is made to stumble? I am not indignant.
You know, this catalog here is him boasting. Mm-hmm. Now, everything he says here that he experienced is true. He experienced all these things. We know he experienced them. Some of them we know about from his letters. Other of them we know about from the Acts of the Apostles. We know he went through all this stuff. He's pulling it out here for a reason. But whatever anyone dares to boast of, I'm speaking like a fool. I also dare to boast of that. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. I.e., they were boasting about being Hebrew. They were boasting about being Israelites. They were boasting about being descendants of Abraham. They were boasting about their background. Oh, you ought to see our family tree. I mean, I'm the great, 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 great grandson of Washington himself. You ought to listen to me. I know about the Constitution. I got blood in it. So am I, he says. They claim credentials based on their ancestry. I can claim equal credentials, friends. Are they ministers of Christ? I'm talking like a madman. I'm a better one. Well, they aren't ministers of Christ. He just said they were ministers of Satan. That's why he says he's talking like a madman. Are they ministers of Christ? I am talking like a madman. I am a better one. With far greater labors, far more imprisonments, with countless floggings and often near death, I'm sure they didn't brag about all that they suffered.
Oh, no.
That would be not in keeping with the super apostle character. No. But he's bragging about the real characteristic of an apostle who, when he preaches the truth of the gospel, is often opposed, even by those who ought to be accepting him. With far greater labors, far more imprisonments, with countless floggings, and often near death, 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. The stiff penalty. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I received a stoning. Paul was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. Oh, man. Stay off the boat that Paul is on. And this is before the big one in the Acts. Well, on the way to Rome. 3 times I was shipwrecked. For a night and a day I was adrift at sea. On frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from bandits, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, thirsty and hungry and thirsty, often without food, cold and naked. And besides other things, I am under daily pressure because of my anxiety for all the churches. Who is weak? And I am not weak. Who is made to stumble? And I am not indignant. His response to the bragging of the so-called eminent apostles, the so-called super apostles, is to truly brag. Not of his own superiority, but of what it really means to follow Christ and be opposed by Satan himself. And that's what he does here in this catalog. And in the midst of all of those oppositions, I am under daily pressure because of my anxiety for all the churches. Not just for you, friends. For all the churches. All the people of God. If I must boast, he says in verse 30, if I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. Not of my pedigree, not of my attainments, but of the things that show my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, blessed be he forever, knows that I do not lie. In other words, read between the lines there. One of the things that was being charged to him, against him, was that he lied about his background. He lied about what he was going through. One of the things that would have been said about this very paragraph here from verse 21b through 29 was that, oh, he's just making all that up. He didn't really go through all this. He really didn't have all these events occur. He didn't really get beaten with rods. He didn't get stoned. He didn't get shipwrecked. He wasn't in frequent danger. The Jews didn't do anything to him. The Gentiles didn't do anything. He wasn't in danger in any cities. He wasn't in danger in the wilderness. All that stuff, he just made that up, trying to get your attention. And he says, The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, blessed be he forever, knows that I do not lie. In Damascus, the governor under King Aretas guarded the city of Damascus in order to seize me. But I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall and escaped from his hand. You know? I mean, it doesn't end. I went through holy heck. It's not been easy, friend. And I'm going to brag about the hard stuff. Not about the stuff that amplifies my greatness, but in my weaknesses. I'm going to brag about that. I'm going to brag about that which shows forth the truth of the gospel. Satan hates the gospel. He opposes the gospel. He's going to try to stop the gospel in any way he can. And this is the kind of stuff he throws. The kind of stuff that the super apostles are shoveling at me is the very kind of stuff that Satan shovels at me. Which is one of the ways that Paul knows that they are nothing but ministers of Satan. Questions?
Would they have gotten the ministers of Satan, would they have gotten a copy of this?
Well, not necessarily. Had any of them been in Corinth when the letter arrived, it would have been read orally in house churches, and they would have heard it. And can you imagine sitting there?
Otherwise, they got it through the grapevine. But you know what Paul said?
yeah, that's
there you
exactly
go.
What I was
thinking. And of course, it changed about five times before
it probably got worse. But I don't see how it could get much worse than Paul calling you a minister of Satan.
No.
That's pretty bad. That is as harsh as when Paul said, if an angel of heaven says anything to you contrary to what I have said unto you, let them be accursed.
Now,
yes.
Who is he? Now, is he making reference to, like you were talking about earlier, James and Peter and the ones, the apostles that, like you said, had traveled with Christ? Or is he talking about, you know, like you said, the Mormon preacher in there?
Probably not specifically James, but he calls them the brethren of James in the letter to the Galatians. And he makes reference to Peter as being a hypocrite in how he conducted himself before the brethren of James show up at table fellowship with Jews and Gentiles together, and then how he acted after the brethren of James showed up, and he had to get away from all that unkosher food at the table, so quickly he probably knocked his chair over pulling away from the table. And so he pointed out Peter's hypocrisy, and he identified the circumcision party, those who wished to try to add works to grace, those who tried to say, The Judaizing Christians, the brethren of James, were saying, it's good that you Gentiles are now Christians, but to really be a Christian, you've got to become a Jew too. Which means you've got to change what you eat, and you've got to get circumcised, and you've got to do all the things that make a Jew a Jew.
So what that guy was telling you for?
Kinda. He was making it very clear that, you know, you ought to become a Jew. If you're really going to be a follower of a Messiah, you need to follow a Messiah. And Messiahs are Jews. Yeshua ben Yosef of Nazareth was a Jew. You ought to be one too. Kind of idea. And that's what the Judaizing Christians, that's why they're called Judaizing Christians. They're trying to convert Gentiles from being Gentile Christians into being Jewish Christians, which is, you really got it, friends. And so they were taking the gospel of Jesus Christ and essentially saying, grace and salvation by grace through faith in Jesus Christ get you started. But you've not really arrived until you've added good works. Until you've suddenly added all those things that place you in conformity with the law of Moses. And once you've done that, then you've really arrived. And therefore, in essence, they would say, not grace and faith get you started, but it's insufficient for you to be a really good Christian. And apparently, that message had filtered over into Corinth, too. It was a big message. It was a problem for Paul in Galatia. And it had filtered into Corinth in the midst of all that other stuff that was going on. Can you imagine what kind of a cauldron that must have been? Of competing arguments. On one hand, you got a guy who's engaged in a relationship with his father's wife, and on the other hand, you got these Judaizing Christians are saying, put away that ham and cheese sandwich, and guys, time to lay it on the line and get cut for Jesus.
So why do they still circumcise babies when they're born?
I'm sorry?
Why are they still circumcising?
Why do Gentiles circumcise babies when they're born? For medical reasons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a medical reason for it. For
cleanliness. At one point in time, they believed that it was cleaner sense, then they've changed their standard on it, and they said it's up to you, it's a choice, you know, you can have it done or you can choose not to have it done. But
it's now a cultural thing amongst the Gentiles here in the United States. Now we do it as a surgical procedure now here in the United States to a baby that's just been born. We don't wait. the Jews had to wait to a certain point, to the eighth day, and then they would do it. And there's a religious reason for it. But what the Judaizing Christians, the Jewish Christians said, the brethren of James said, was that, men, you Gentiles, you haven't been circumcised. The symbol of the covenant relationship with Yahweh since the time of Abraham is circumcision. So,
well, I've always wondered why they selected that particular procedure and that particular organ as a symbol of...
Well, it was a good way of eliminating women from membership.
That probably had something to do with it.
Very much so.
That probably had something to
Which
do with it.
Which was one of the things I noticed, too, is the brethren of James seemed to want to go back to the tradition, early tradition, and because women were starting to preach and be treated as a rabbi,
mm-hmm.
and Paul's response was, well, just do it, but cover your head. Where brother James
go.
Were like,
don't
get
even
thee
do
out
it.
Of here. You
Hush.
Can't. Yeah.
You go sit in the gallery. Kind
of
attitude.
Other side of the wall.
Uh-huh. Other side of the wall. Now,
see, what that's like when we went to the Wailing Wall. I couldn't pray where the men were. I had to go over in
right.
the women's
they
section.
They have a separation wall where women could go to one side
and men with the
other
at the wall. Yeah. So circumcision today in the United States, for the most part, does not have a religious basis. It started as such, but it doesn't now. And so don't worry about that issue. What it meant to them and what Paul is using it as a symbol of is trying to add to the gospel of salvation by grace through faith in Jesus Christ. Human efforts.
Back to
obedience to the law for continued salvation. And that seems to have become a problem in the Corinthian church. So, I mean, you had both of those things, those ideas competing. You had libertarianism, or power, more than anything else. I mean, that guy had a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, and you had other people coming in who were undermining Paul from the other side and saying, you can't trust him. He didn't tell you about circumcision. Women, he didn't tell you you got to start cooking kosher. No more ham and cheese sandwiches. No more meat with blood in it. None of that stuff.
No clothing with mixed threads.
No clothing with mixed threads. Guys, you got to stop trimming your beards and you got to wear them curls. There are all those external signs and symbols of being a member of the covenant community that Jewish Christians wanted to apply to Gentile Christians. And Paul didn't mess with that. He preached the gospel, salvation by grace through faith, not works. And so they were coming after him. The super apostles were among them and said, we've got to add these things. Now, was it James himself? Probably not, although it would have been wink, wink, nudge, nudge, go ahead and do it. But he himself probably wasn't out there doing it. But the brethren, Paul calls them the brethren of James, i.e., those who followed his direction.
Does that mean the guys from Jerusalem?
Yes, the guys from Jerusalem. They come from Jerusalem. They had the authorization and teaching of the apostles who traveled with Jesus.
But kind of warped it.
Yes. Try to, you know, Jesus was not the Messiah they were expecting. But he's good enough. After all, he was raised from the dead. So let's just make him a little more like we were hoping he would be. And therefore, if Gentiles are going to come in, I mean, up until this time, Judaism was not a proselytizing religion. You could become a Jew. They were happy about that. But it wasn't a big issue for them. They weren't trying to make more Jews other than biologically. and so that wasn't their thing. But now, suddenly, you had all these Gentiles essentially coming into the covenant relationship with Yahweh, but they weren't becoming Jews.
Well, what it came down to was, you know, you want to join my club, you know, you got to pay the membership.
You got to pay the membership dues. It's an issue of control. If you're going to be a member of the church, you're going to look and smell and act and do what we do. You've got to obey what we say.
You got to wear the uniform.
And those Gentiles have been getting in too easily. And they don't look and smell and act like Jews.
Besides that, they can eat pork.
They can eat pork and we can't. Yeah.
That's what it sounded like to me. Like almost like they're saying, you got in. Kind of like the...
Yeah, and that was part of it. I mean...
Well, it was like when the followers of John the Baptist questioned Jesus about why are they eating while they're fasting.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's well, why are you getting away with it and we're not?
Why... And Jesus said that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath.
Right.
So, they took Jesus and decided to sort of add to him. And Paul was preaching the gospel, plain and simple, pure, to Gentiles, and they were accepting it. He had problems enough as he was with their pagan background. And now you got the Judaizing Christians coming along and adding the problems of the Jewish background in.
Well, I mean, had they been pretty much adding to it all along, they took the Ten Commandments and turned it into how many laws?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hundreds.
Amplified the law from what it was, from what it was to details over what you could eat and where you could eat it and whatnot. And it got worse than the biblical code too. Far worse.
And so it got to the point that every one of us was doomed to hell because we couldn't follow it.
Huh.
Well, just the 10 is enough for that.
Yeah. Just the 10 is enough for that, but you add in everything else and you've got a serious, serious problem. Yeah.
Well, and I can understand a lot of those laws because if you look at them, they're for self-protection from diseases. Trichinosis was so common in pork.
True.
Well, in actuality, their dietary laws are actually what kept them healthy when
right.
a lot of other people were sick.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
The problem is that you believe too much into it, you take it.
Well, I think what happened is some of the leaders went, I get power from this. What more can we do?
How can I maintain control?
And you know, the interesting thing is we were just talking about this in class today. They want to talk about mythology and why Christianity survived mythology. And I said, well, you have to think about it. You walk in, before you even walk into your house, you have to pray to the house god. Then you go into your kitchen, you got your kitchen god. You got your food, you got your food god. And any one of them at any time could change their minds and just...
God.
Yeah.
The porcelain god.
Yeah.
That's the god you pray to after you've had too much to drink.
Copyright by Dr. Gregory S. Neal. All rights reserved. Visit us on the web at www.revneal.org. That's www.revneal.org. This program was produced by Dr. Greg Neal.